This is Yusuf.
And this is In-Flight Entertainment.
The throwback college enrollment or applications episode. I don't know how to coin this one.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing like family-friendly college enrollment week themed movies.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And yeah, we kicked it off with Orange County. And now we bring to you, ladies and gentlemen, the 1986 classic Back to School.
Yes. This is, I feel like everyone that grew up in the 80s probably saw this movie. Because it had Rodney Dangerfield in it, and after Caddyshack, you kind of just had to watch everything with Rodney.
Oh, totally. Yes, you had to.
You know, this was him at his peak, just having fun.
Yeah, just have fun. Great feel. All right. Well, let me reel it back. All right. So, this movie came out June 13th. Oh, wow. Summer 86. June 13th, 1986. Now, every time we go into... What is that?
Were you 9 or 10 at this time?
Eight.
Oh, my God. You were a baby.
I mean... Look, I was old enough, Jim. Okay. To know Rodney Dangerfield's humor. all right.
Reed, I'm sorry. Yes. The Roger Dangerfield's humor in Back to School transcended age. It worked for the 8-year-old all the way up to college kids.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, the movie was PG. So, I mean, it's like Jenna said, it's family friendly. So you actually put this on, you know, and people can make like some of the jokes, some of the references are a little dated if you show them younger people. But it's nonetheless, it's a PG film. So everyone can watch it.
What references were dated? I just watched it. I don't remember anything being maybe I'm dated and so nothing.
It's 80s. By default, if someone younger watches this film, by default, it's got to be some dated jokes, some dated, like, you know, situations that they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like I need to start having my like 13-year-old niece, 12-year-old niece watch all of these shows, movies to give me a perspective on whether or not what I think is not.
Oh, that's a good idea. And then she could tell us this movie is 13-year-old approved, meaning that I get all of like what the director and the writer was doing in the movie at the time or with the actors. So we should do that. It's like, is it 13-year-old approved? Meaning that none of the stuff will go over 13-year-old's head.
Good news. She watched Alien last week, or at least the 10-year-old watched Alien, and she approved of the movie. She didn't think it was scary, though.
She did or did not?
Did not.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I mean, she's in the age of torture porn. So Alien is definitely watered down and kind of slow and, you know, not a lot going on. Yeah. So I can understand that. That's right. But she approved. So that's all that matters. So like I said, 86, June 13th. Now, 86, always give a shout out. Every time we review a film in 1986, I always have to give a shout out to my first niece because my first niece was born February 1986. So, Miss Erica, she's about to be, 35. Oh, goodness. Ooh. All right, I ain't gonna put it out like that. I ain't gonna put it out. But she's old. She's getting old. She's getting old. Anyway, so.
You're old.
Well, I'm refined, General. Okay, we're refined. Like. Old don't apply to us at this point. We're fine. So when we were watching on TV, going from 5 to 1, Golden Girls number 5. Yeah, your girl, the murderer, was number 4 with Murder, She Wrote. Cheers number 3. Alex B. Keaton in the game, Family Ties number 2. And of course, it's 86. So of course, the Huxtables are dominating it with Cosby Show. Now, song. June 1986. And actually, I didn't know the movie.
Richard Marx?
What did you say?
Was it Richard Marx?
Which one? Which Richard Marx movie?
I don't know. I feel like in 86, that was the summer of Richard Marx. I just can't remember what music he was playing.
Well, definitely not the Robin Hood one, because that didn't come out to like 89, 90. You know?
No, he didn't. Richard Marx didn't do Robin Hood.
Yeah, the Everything I Do.
That was Ryan Adams.
Oh, oops, I get those mixed. No, actually, it was Madonna. Live to Tell off of the At Close Range soundtrack, which is a movie we definitely have to review one of these days.
What movie is that?
Type it up. When you see it, you'll be like, oh, that one. I remember that. Sean Penn, Christopher Walken.
I vaguely sort of remember something about that.
Yeah, we need to do that one. So.
And by the way, Richard Marx, his first record came out in 87, so it's off by 1 year.
Off 1 year. Yeah, you're almost there. Yeah. So Madonna was still doing it. You know, I think at this time, Madonna and Sean Penn was kicking it. So she wanted to lend some music to her man's movie. And that's what it was.
I'm Googling it.
Okay. Yeah.
What was it called again? What movie?
At Close Range. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you've seen this film. I'm pretty sure, yeah. I mean, not at the movies, but I'm sure you've seen it at some point in time.
No, I have not seen this movie.
Oh, you need to see that movie. Yes, that's an 80s. That's an 80s, like, kind of. Christopher Walken and Sean Penn, general. Come on.
Oh, I feel like it's one of those movies that would come on TBS or TNT, and I'd start to watch it, and I'd be like, ugh, they're overacting. I'm going to go watch something else.
No, you got to sit down for this one. I mean, it's weird. Like, 80s films, like, there's a handful of 80s films that have, like, a third act or ending that kind of like, oh, I will always remember this movie. Like, this one. Remember Miracle Mile?
No.
Okay. It was like one night, like Anthony Edwards finds out that there's like a nuclear missile that's heading towards Los Angeles or something like that. Like that movie always stuck with me. And the third act of this At Close Range always sticks with me for some reason, because it was one of those like
last. It's based on a real family in Pennsylvania.
Yes. So effed up. Yeah, you'll like this movie. Yeah, I think I have it. I'll give it to you so you can check it out. Yeah, and plus the soundtrack is good because it's, you know, Madonna, whatever.
Does Christopher Walken play like a Christopher Walken type character?
Yes, that's why this movie's so good.
And it has Mary Stuart Masterson in it. Mm-hmm. And a few other, and Crispin Glover's in it. Kiefer Sutherland's in it.
Yep.
Well, you just had to say Kiefer Sutherland, honestly.
Jack freaking Bauer's in this movie, Jenna. Come on.
I mean, his voice is just sexy.
So when you seen Phone Booth, you wasn't threatened. You were like, oh man, This, oh, that guy's so sexy on the other end of that phone.
Exactly, yes. I'm like, I'm all in for this serial killer.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, hey, you know, it's Jack Bauer, you know. He's a national treasure. So, speaking of national treasures, this particular film, Back to School, we have the one, the only, Rodney Dangerfield. With the cast, we have Sally Kellerman. We have Bill Zabka, a.k.a. Johnny from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And we have a very young and spry Robert Downey Jr. in his film.
It was early in his career where I feel like he didn't. There's a few movies that he did in the early 80s, or really the 80s, where he always looked like he was
on drugs.
On drugs, yeah. And so Back to School, he didn't look like he was strung out. The next year he did Less Than Zero, which yeah. I feel like we have to do at some point.
Oh, totally.
Because between Back to School and Less Than Zero, he went from looking like just your typical college kid to your strung out junkie, and really art mimicking life.
Yeah.
I mean, very sad. Because, yeah, I mean, really lucky that he didn't OD at some point in his life. But yes.
Now he getting those Disney residuals for Iron Man. So, you know, talk about a triumph.
Right. And I don't know if you remember, but when he was cast as Iron Man, it was a couple years after he'd gone sober out of rehab and everything. And people are like, he's the worst casting decision ever for Iron Man. And then the first trailer came out and people are like, oh.
Yeah,
this is so bad.
Right. Yeah. Even Disney was like, John Favreau was like, look, he's my Iron Man. Like, I want him as my Iron Man. And, you know, of course, Disney was like, well, do you kind of know his history? Favreau was like a staunch supporter of keeping him on. And and it all worked out.
Yeah.
But this is pre-Iron Man. This is young 80s Robert Downey Jr.
Right. Before he looked like he was a strung out junkie on screen. Exactly. And played those characters on screen. He just looked like another college kid.
Right. So the film have pictured black and white kind of montage of, you know, a young Thornton Mellon played by Rodney Dangerfield, and how kind of like his parents had a business and he kind of took over the business and then the business flourished. And then we see him kind of, he gets the riches and he's successful, super successful. His business is super successful. What is it? Is a big and tall? It's a chain of big, yeah. And business is good for him, you know. So he's in kind of like this very, he's in his marriage that's just based off of just vanity, and like he don't really love the wife. He's not with his original wife that he had his son with, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right, his first wife died. Mm. And so now he has his backup wife.
Right. Yeah. The trophy wife, which is played by, I have to give her a shout out, Adrienne Barbeau. For people who remember Escape from New York, she was in there. She was on like a One Day at a Time or Too Close for a Cup. She was on one of those 80s sitcoms, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, and she was I gotta give her a shout out because she was awesome.
She's one of those actresses that looks familiar. So while you're watching it, you're like, I know you, but I don't know what I know you from.
She was good. I mean,
she's like the Italian face, like female character that you see in movies. But yeah, she was like the badass chick in Escape from New York. Wasn't she in was she in Halloween?
Yeah. Yeah, she was. She was. She was in.
She was also in Argo.
I'm sorry. She was in The Fog. The Fog with Jamie Lee Curtis. Yes. Another John Carpenter movie. Yes. Yeah, she was in that. She was in Cannonball Run.
Thing.
Yeah. The voice of the computer. Yeah, so yeah, she's been around. She's been in some fun movies. So we have her. So pretty much, Thornton Mellon, he is, he's at a crossroad in his life, right? It's like, you know, he sees his wife cheating on him and all that. So he's like, you know what? My son's in college. I'm going to go visit him. And that's pretty much how the movie kind of springboard into like the movie.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not just that he wants to go visit his kid. He's like escaping from his wife, his kids not coming home for Thanksgiving or spring break or something. So he's like, I'm going to go off to college and see how he's doing.
Yeah.
And when he shows up there, he decides that he's going to, he never had the opportunity to go to college. So now he has enough money and power that he's going to do that.
Right. Because he never went to school, but he always stressed with his son, you know, go to school, get educated. Don't be like me, you know, like a person who didn't go to school, you know, you have more opportunities if you, you know, go get educated. And then he applied that same principle on himself. Like, hey, you know, I haven't got my degree. Like, let me go to school. And so he make that decision. He at first muscles himself into the university, you know, with his money. Because what he bought, like, what did he buy? He bought like a library. Or he bought something in the university that kind of had him in on something like that. I forget. He spent money to get in there. Right? He bought.
Yeah. I forget what he bought a new building.
For yeah. And that's how he got in there.
It's funny because in like this like day and age where we joke about rich white people getting into places like Harvard or Yale or whatever, this movie in the 80s just sort of called that out big time. Also, you know, we did OC earlier in the week, and the Colin Hanks's character, he ended up getting into Stanford because his parents bought a new admissions building. And so it's really, both these movies highlight how people with money can just sort of buy their way into anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Definitely interesting commentary on that. And also, yeah, in the movie, we see the son, who is polar opposite. He actually wants to be there on his own merit. Like, yeah, he don't really mention his father, or he don't even really mention his background when he's in school. Like, oh, you know, I come from like, you know, a rich dad that owned a business. He's just trying to like keep his head down. You know, fit, like do classes, fit, like, you know, pass classes. He's on a swim team that we find out, well, early, a little early on in the movie that Thornton Mellon, he have diving skills. He used to be, you know, a diving extraordinaire in his younger years. And I think it's kind of like...
So for people that don't know, on the boardwalk, like Coney Island, the Jersey Shore, places like that, they used to have exhibition diving things. They used to have like a diving horse. There's an entire movie about that. probably a documentary out there if you wanted to try to find it, YouTube videos. But in this movie, Rodger Dangerfield's character used to be one of the people that would like warm up the crowd with his diving skills before the diving course came out and did their bit.
Right. And he mastered this unicorn of a diving move called the triple landing. You got to watch the movie to see what the triple landing is, but it's pretty amazing. Yeah, so he's in school, you know, he's with his son and his son's roommate played by Robert Downey Jr. And we see that the son kind of have the hots for, you know, of course, this girl who's with the douchebag played by Bill Zabka, who's on the swim team also. So we kind of have that whole dynamic going on. That's with all the 80s films. And then, you know, we see Rodney Dangerfield kind of using his wealth and generosity for things, right? So he pretty much just kind of knock out the walls of like the dorm rooms, and it's like this really big kind of loft type setup between him, his son, and his roommate. Wait, hold on. Sally Kellerman is the literature teacher.
Yeah, she's the lit teacher.
Yeah, lit teacher, right.
But who's the history teacher?
Mother freaking Sam Kinison.
Yes.
Yes. The one.
I feel the professors that they highlight as he starts to go to the different classes, he goes to the like finance class, where we meet a super uptight finance dude.
Philip.
Played by Stan Whitehead.
Yeah. He plays that, Philip.
Yeah. That basically, like, he couldn't become an investment banker, so he became a professor. Then you have Sam Kinison, that plays a history professor, who's just batshit crazy.
And classic Sam Kinison fashion. Now, kids, if you don't really know too much about Sam Kinison, please go on YouTube, type in Sam Kinison, look at some of the stand-ups, and you will get an idea of how he was such a perfect role for the character he played.
Yeah, also, apparently it was really hard to film the scenes that he was in because Rodger Dangerfield kept cracking up in the scene that they filmed.
Oh, that's funny.
I basically imagine like any conspiracy theory type of person being a history professor and yelling at the students about his conspiracies. So, yes.
So then we have these professors that he's kind of toggling between throughout his schooling, so to speak. And tensions start to form between the son and Thornton, Ryan J. for the character, where he sees that Thornton is not really serious about his education. He's more.
So I would argue with that. It's not that he's not serious about his education. It's just that he's realizing that his real life experiences don't match with what is being taught in the classes of the students. And so he keeps arguing. And when he gets shot down, he's like, well, fuck this. I know what happens in the real world, and they keep telling me that I'm wrong and that I'm going to fail. So I'm just going to pay other people to do my work for me.
Yeah, like Kurt Vonnegut. That was such a good scene.
It was the real Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah, it was a real Kurt Vonnegut. Yeah,
playing the Kurt Vonnegut character.
Yes, that's Kurt Vonnegut stopped there to help them with the paper about Kurt Vonnegut.
He failed.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, definitely one of the funniest scenes because, you know, the Sally Kellerman character you know, gave him an F. Somebody's like, well, whoever wrote this character don't know a thing about Kurt Vonnegut. Then it cuts directly to a scene where Rodney Dangerfield's on the phone. And he's like, and another thing, Kurt Vonnegut. Oh, so.
I don't know shit. I'm going to call up. He like lists another writer who I forget who the other writer is, who's an actual friend of Roger Dangerfield in real life. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of funny scenes. I mean, and of course, Rodney Dangerfield one-liners are second to none, you know, so rapid fire. He's like the old school comedian that he just throw these one-liners at you that you have to take a second to absorb, like the one-liner and get it. It's like one of my favorite lines that he says, we explain Sally Kellerman how horrible like the marriage is with the, you know, the second trophy wife. It's like, oh no, I mean, she gives great head aches. I'm thinking that one thing, like, oh, that's sorry, that's funny. Yeah, like she had the way he delivers it. Oh God, like he's the master. He was many recipes. He was the master of one-liners. But yeah, so we have that. Oh, and I have to mention the person who made the music of this movie, the composer, Mr. Danny Elfman, who actually was a cameo in this film because he was with this group called Oingo Boingo, and he did a song for this particular film called Dead Man's Party.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, yes, they played the song in the movie, but he wrote that song after visiting a hotel, I think it was in Salt Lake, where a family committed mass suicide by jumping out of the hotel window. And so that song was based on this family committing suicide, jumping out the window. It just happened to be played in this movie.
Wow. Hey, he knew he was smart. You're like, hey, can I do this song in this movie? Like, sure, why not? Go ahead. And you know, God bless Danny Elfman because he rode the wave of the 80s so hard. And God bless him. I mean, he's the general of like, okay, think about it. Okay, so he did the theme for Weird Science, which I still listen to. And, you know, and then he wrote it into, you know, like Dead Man's Party, Oingo Boingo, had their albums and stuff in the 80s. And then he linked up with Tim Burton and boom, it was it. Stratosphere. Batman, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like, you know, then Spider-Man, like, he just, I mean, I would love to see, I don't know if Danny Elfman actually wrote a book, but if he wrote a book, I want to read it. I need to actually go on Amazon and read it.
Well, I can't think of his name right now because I'm having a senior moment, but the lead singer of Nine Inch Nails, I feel like he's sort of on the same trajectory as he was, and that he started out with Trent Reznor.
Started out with
Nine Inch Nails doing some absolutely amazing work. This past week was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. No. And he did the soundtrack to Social Network movie.
Mm-hmm. Gone Girl. He did some other stuff. Yeah, he hooked up with David Fincher. That's the thing. That's the key. You link up with a director and the director like what you deliver for their movie, they would keep you. I mean, take a look at, I mean, Steven Spielberg and John Williams is like a perfect example. Like almost every movie.
I you know, it's just your movie and your music is your sound are all very, very closely connected. And when you can have a composer and a director that work very closely together and feed off of each other, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and it all works out. So, man, hats off to Danny, man. He rode the 80s into the stratosphere. Rodney did. So Thornton Mellon just, he comes to the realization that he actually have to buckle down and study so he can pass these classes. So it's not a fluke. He's not there by his wealth. He's there by the capacity of his mind, right?
Right. He's not just paying for his degree. He's actually earning his degree.
Right. So there's kind of like, you know, the heart of this particular film. It's like, you know, you come from privilege. Okay, yeah, you come from privilege, but don't deny yourself the genuine education that will make you grow as a human being. You know, like the wealth is exterior. Education is the interior, you know?
Right. I mean, there's lots that you can learn from real world experiences, but there's some things that you can actually learn from people in classrooms.
Exactly. Oh, and side note, did you know? Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure. If not, I'm about to tell you. Harold Ramis is one of the writers of this film.
Who's he?
Egon.
For people that don't know who Egon is, who's he?
Ghostbusters. Or if you're a gentleman and didn't know
who. I mean, I know who that is, but not all of our listeners may know who that is.
Come on. Who haven't seen Ghostbusters? Come on.
There might be some people out there.
All right.
Isn't he also known for other things as well?
Yeah. Groundhog's Day. He directed that. He did something else. He did some other stuff. But he's known for Ego. Oh, and Stripes. Him and Bill Murray.
Stripes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny when I rewatch it. Now when I watch 80s films, I pay attention to the credits and see like who's actually a part of these films that I, you know, used to watch. I don't know how many times. I'm like, oh, Harold Ramis is one of the writers. Okay. I guess that's why, you know, it's kind of like the heart to it. You know, I think Harold Ramis kind of threw some, you know, some nuggets of, you know, character growth.
Right. I feel, well, yeah, I mean, Stripes and this definitely have some similar comedic characteristics to each of them.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely. Yeah, so cool. May rest in peace, you know, Harold Ramis. Wow, Harold Ramis, Rodney Dangerfield. Yeah. It's Sam Kinison. He's not with us. Oh, wow. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. I thought Harold Ramis also directed things. Oh, he directed Groundhog Day.
Yeah, that's what I said. He did the Ice Storm too. No, I'm sorry. No, not Ice Storm. He did
Ice Harvest.
Ice Harvest, right. The John Cusack joint. Yeah. That was a good one too.
Yeah. National Lampoon's Vacation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Wally World. Yeah, sir. Yeah, so, yeah, so, like, yeah, it's a good, solid, okay, sorry, before I get to it. All right, so, do you want to fire off the ratings?
Sure. The ratings are ass on sofa, definitely watch it, bring the kids over, putting on your shoes, you're not sure if this is something that you should spend your time on, or going out in the street and being exposed to the increase in COVID cases.
Yes.
So what is it for you?
Oh, I was trying to like be all mysterious about it, but I mean, it's assholes. Hey, come on. I mean, it's like quintessential 80s comedy right here. Yeah. Rodney Dangerfield was at his most like comedic, but the script served his comedic timing so well. And like I said, for it to be a PG movie, like he was funny as all get out, you know? It was like one of those examples where like, you don't have to be super edgy and he can still hold a movie. He can still be hilarious. You don't have to rely on like really, you know, edgy or R-rated like one-liners. He can really like give you some punchy jokes.
It is an actually 80s movie that is PG-13 and really PG-13. It is still, I would still say it's safe. There might be some boob shots in there.
No, it was some women in like a two-piece in a hot tub, but that was pretty much it.
Right. So it is a real PG-13.
You're right. It was some boobies. Yes. I have to think about that.
Yeah, boob shots.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, who hasn't seen boobs? If you haven't, I'm so sorry. It's ass on the sofa for me too. It's only an hour and 30 minutes long. It's a quick movie. I feel like even if you watch it with your kids, like kids nowadays might enjoy it. They may not get all of the references in there, like the Kurt Vonnegut or some of the history references. But you know, it's an opportunity to educate them on things after the movie.
Exactly. And plus, you know, give them an insight on the comedic genius that was Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yes. So there you have it. Back to School. It's always good rewatching this film. So funny. So crit. So 80s. And after really breaking down or paying attention to the people behind the scenes, just made me, you know, like and feel even more. Definitely. So next week, we have another batch of college joints for you to take a look at and review.
We're doing, once again, some school-related movies. So we're just continuing, really, the month of November, focusing on school, college, and what it's like to do those things.
Yeah, in a crazy fictional way, as movies always do. So we just switching it up this year. I know last year we were, you know, just getting it in on like the Thanksgiving or holiday films. But, you know, we're doing something a little different this time because 2020 is not a typical year. So we're not doing typical things right now. So we just riding a wave of 2020.
Right. Yes.
Well, until next week, we wish everyone safe physical distancing and
wear a mask.
Yes. Peace.